Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, filling in today for Lori Walsh. The discussion on policing continues as we take a look at issues locally with our Dakota political junkies. That, along with some news involving members of the South Dakota legislature on tribal checkpoints and the pretty damning statement from a former head of the LRC as he's on his way out. Lots to talk about today. Our political junkies this time around are John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Jackie. Glad to be here.
And in Vermilion, Michael Card, associate professor of political science at the University of South Dakota. Welcome back, Professor Card.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Jackie. Greetings, John.
Yes, greetings.
I want to start off with last night, Mayor Paul Tenhaken sent out a tweet. I've got the tweet in front of me, so I'll go ahead and read it word for word. The initial tweet says, "As we move forward in Sioux Falls with strategies to ensure we remain a safe and equitable city, the dialogue of defunding the police will not be part of our conversation. Our administration is working toward realistic solutions with lasting impact, not political puffery." And then about an hour later, he expanded on about ideas about how well-funded police departments would equal better and more training for officers, better technology, stronger school resource programs, things like that. He ended with, "If you have ideas for the community, send them to me at this email address." And then some of the more sarcastic replies being like, "Here's my idea, defund the police." So I'm not sure who wants to kick off with this one. Maybe I'll start with you, Mike. How does this play in as we're thinking locally about the rhetoric around defunding / disbanding / abolishing the police?
Well, to give credit, there's been a lot of criticism about police misbehavior, but we also know that that isn't all police activity. Police have a tremendously difficult job. You don't know whether the next moment is going to put yourself on a trajectory that will prove to be the toughest challenge of your professional career, or it's going to be as simple as putting on your shoes in the morning. And what we've seen in the news most recently are several graphic images of misbehavior by individuals who happen to be police. But we've also seen other people engage in similar behaviors that identifies a certain amount of bias. I think the issue of defunding the police is probably a representation that goes a little far in saying that we need to abolish police. I just can't see that. I'm more in the line, I think Mayor Tenhaken is capturing that by saying we will always need public safety personnel. We will always need someone to go after the truly bad people and protect the rest of us.
John Hunter, where do you weigh in on this conversation?
Well, Mike is right. It's an incredibly complicated topic, and there are good police departments and bad police departments, as well as people within those departments. Just like any occupation, I suspect there is good public radio hosts and not so good public radio hosts. So what I think most people would like to do is to try to find out where's the best ones? Where's the model police departments, the ones with the best practices, the ones with the most success, with the least violence, the least claims against them, and so forth, and try to emulate those. I do think that defunding is the concept of it is a frustration, and the fact that so many people are outraged by these bad actors, as they were called, the people who did the terrible things, that it's a frustration reaction. It said, look, let's just cut out the whole thing. It's probably not a responsible thing to do for public safety, but the frustration is real, and it's broad, and it's widespread, and I think people are trying to, at the moment, to think of anything that they can to improve the situation.
Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with USD's Dean of the Law School, Neil Fulton, yesterday a little bit about this idea of defunding the police, and his his comment, which is I've seen echoed in a wide variety of posts and articles and things like this, is that when we say or when people say defund the police, it's not so much about in many cases, not all, but in many cases, it's not so much putting that funding down to zero. It's about reallocating some of those funds to other community resources and things like that to try to solve some of the issues that we're seeing. A critique of Mayor Ten Haken's tweet I saw last night was when you ask a community for input, for ideas of solutions, and one rises above, is it the best idea to immediately call that unreasonable? Rather than continuing a conversation. I guess, John Hunter, and then we'll circle back to Mike, but start with John. How do you see, I guess, leaders, especially locally, really grappling with some of these ideas?
Well, I think most good public leaders do look for input, but it isn't necessarily this particular situation, and not necessarily a vote of the social media respondents. In other words, the people who respond most to in one manner or another is not necessarily how the leadership would respond. I think good leaders listen, evaluate, take the best ideas, try to implement them, discuss with others, and do that. But it isn't a social media response campaign that is what would happen. We'd ask our leaders to be thoughtful, to accept public input, to weigh all the circumstances and make the best decision that they can.
Mike, how about you?
Well, I think John is right on target with this, that it's a quick solution to a problem that is deeply buried within human beings. Is we have a tendency to bias, and that bias occasionally shows up in situations that get out of control. You know, how do we teach each other and train each other to slow down and not appeal to our lesser nature that's being fed by adrenaline or fear, and to slow down and think this is another human being, and create our policies in line with that.
Mm-hmm. I want to kind of continue on in a similar vein as we're seeing. Sioux Falls had its large march and demonstration. Time makes no sense to me anymore. A week, 2 weeks ago. Rapid City has been seeing several days in a row of protests. As this continues on, Mike, what are some of the, responses to these demonstrations? I know Vermilion has had a couple marches as well, and I've seen some interesting articles with headlines about how even in predominantly Republican and rural areas like South Dakota, we are seeing some of these marches pop up as well. So how are we seeing this conversation continue beyond the initial spark a couple weeks ago, Mike?
Well, I think there's a couple different issues, one of which is the entire issue of protesting, and then the other issue is one of civil disobedience, which, again, you had a conversation with, mm-hmm. with Dean Fulton yesterday. And then the third one is actual unlawful behavior that's not based on normative values of protesting the nature of the law, which is what civil disobedience is. That's where we tend to get into words like riots and true civil disobedience. Well, we get into notions of riots, mm-hmm. throwing rocks at individuals, which is an assault, and other crimes. So I think if we're looking at peaceable protests, I think people aren't so worried about that. The danger is that when you have an unorganized protest, there are lots of different people join in, some of which see it as an opportunity that there's an opportunity to loot. There's an opportunity to strike back at what you perceive to be the enemy, which may be the police. It may be a business owner. And, you know, to some extent, the more that protests can be organized and free speech allowed, the better off we're going to be. And I think as we're seeing it most recently, there's been more civil protests. I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but that's what I see going on is for the most part, if we can organize a protest, the organizers are able to create a forum for people to speak their mind. There is no unlawful activity for the most part, unless it's civil disobedience where people are willing to be arrested, and that arrest is to protest what's viewed to be as the immoral nature of the law itself.
John, what sorts of things have you seen up in your neck of the woods?
Well, we believe there's going to be a demonstration Friday here about this topic. And again, Brookings had them, and there's a variety of South Dakota cities doing this, and I think probably on a smaller scale of every state in the country. But protests have a, I don't know if my words are going to be quite right, but a grand American tradition. Protesting is guaranteed by the Constitution. It's a great way, I think, to express concern with leadership. I guess throwing tea in the harbor probably was in their category number three, Mike. costing someone some money. But I'm glad Americans have the right to express their feelings, and I'm glad they're doing it in this case. And this deep-seated problem is being protested because it's a deep-seated problem, and I'm glad for that. The more, the better, I think, then leaders, elected officials, and others will listen the more these kinds of things are. Then you get to stage two that Mike was describing where, civil disobedience, you lie down on the street and you're blocking traffic and you get arrested and so on, no monetary harm to a business. And then this third one where you're taking a claw hammer to the cash register at Target. I mean, there's these different kind of levels, but boy, I think for a problem that we have in this, at least perceived by Americans, that protesting, I think, is a valuable American right, and I'm glad people are doing it.
I want to shift gears now, and I'm going to conflate a couple stories because we're short on time, but I'll outline them and we can discuss as we need. The first story being Wenzel Cummings quitting as the legislature's code counsel after just 1 year on the Legislative Research Council. A pretty stark condemnation of the way that LRC staff are treated by our state legislature. We heard some of that in SDPB's Lee Strubinger's story at the top of the hour. And then also in legislative news, the legislature's State Tribal Relations Committee apparently had offered to help the governor's office as it was working with the tribal checkpoints related to COVID. And in that same meeting saying they were never really involved in that process. And I think what I'm getting at with bringing these two up at the same time is it sounds like things are a little rough in the state house. John, what do we make of these situations that seem to be coming up fairly often?
Well, if I may address the LRC one. Directly, and I'm not an insider, but the LRC has had this, this is not brand new issue for them. This has happened for a while. Legislators have at times been abusive of the LRC, and it shouldn't happen. I mean, the LRC has its role defined very carefully and in a nonpartisan way, and they have done good work. Jim Fry was head of that for a long time, a man I admired, some legislators have taken and not treated the LRC well. So I believe this is I'm saddened that they have a resignation after a short time, but in another way I'm glad it's a issue that may be addressed by this. At least it sounded like when the executive board listen to this, they appeared to be eager to repair that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, what do you have to add about either one of these stories, either the LRC's treatment by the legislature or this idea that the State Tribal Relations Committee wasn't as closely involved in the checkpoint issue as they would like?
Well, and it's not clear from the news reporting that our governor has met with the tribal presidents. Mm-hmm. So it seems as though, and I don't know this, but from what's been reported, is there's been attempts to communicate, but attempts to communicate by letter, not by telephone, not by meeting in person. And we may be getting the legislature, which, as John was intimating, has been in a battle with itself on partisan reasons and between the two chambers for at least a decade, as well as with the governor's office. And those fights show up in interesting places, and that may be the governor wants a quick resolution to the issue, and there isn't one, and perhaps involving the State Tribal Relations Committee wasn't going to allow a quick resolution, which seemed to be the governor's desire by writing to the state's congressional delegation, to the BIA, and to the president to try to get a quicker resolution. But as a guest that was on this program about a week ago was Professor Emeritus Frank Pommersheim, that indicated, well, the law seems pretty clear that the tribe is within its rights to act as it is. Mm. There isn't a quick resolution, and certainly there isn't a quick resolution without conversation. Mm. But as you noted, Jackie, everything's blending together. There's so much happening, it's difficult to have a reasonable timeline on when did that occur? Oh, that was a week ago.
Right.
Boy, it seems like forever. Right? And so I think we just need to slow down and think, what's the most important priority that we're dealing with today? Hmm. And I would suspect that if we can slow down and think, you know, how do we really solve this problem, we can address some of these issues. Maybe that makes me a 61-year-old Pollyanna, but it seems that's what we need to do. You know, and again, part of it's because the unusual times that we're in just obliterate our sense of time.
Hmm. Well, unfortunately, I'm well aware that the time in this segment has run out on us, so we'll have to continue this conversation another time. My guests have been John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, thanks for being here as always.
Thanks, Jackie and Mike.
And Michael Card, Associate Professor of Political Science at USD. Professor Card, thanks to you as well.
I'm pleased to be here and wish everyone a wonderful day.